Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with
Kelsey Swigert. I play Maureen Johnson in the Rent 20th Anniversary Tour.
Yes, a legendary role, as she mentioned, 20th Anniversary Tour of Rent, which is coming to D.C.'s National Theater November 12th through the 17th. Hey, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
Oh, of course. Thank you for having me.
Now, this is one of my favorite shows of all time. Probably a lot of people will agree with that one. But let's, really quick, in case maybe somehow one of our listeners is living under a rock, just break down tell them what it's about, the basic premise here.
Yeah. So it is set in New York City in the 1990s, specifically the East Village. And it's sort of in the height of the AIDS crisis. It tells the story of a bunch of friends who are artists, and there's even a lawyer and a teacher and a different kind of grab bag of people who all know and love each other. And it's basically their story of overcoming the many trials and tribulations that they're experiencing in life, love and loss and disease and gentrification and really, I think at the core, it's really a show about love and wanting to be accepted for exactly who you are. But it was a very revolutionary piece when it debuted in New York in 1996 because it told different stories that hadn't been told on a stage before. So that's sort of the premise of our show, and we're so lucky to get to continue to tell the story every night in 2019.
Awesome. And remind our listeners just how, iconic that Maureen character is, how, it started with the one and only Idina Menzel on Broadway.
The one and only.
A bunch of others, like Vanessa Hudgens has played it. A bunch of people played it in revivals. But how cool is it that you get to play that? How much are you, trying to distance yourself from the Idina Menzel, memory in your mind? Or how much, or do you just own it and say, hey, that's how it was. I'm going to dive into just like she did.
Well, first of all, it's such a dream come true to play this role. I can't even see. I mean, I've been playing it for 3 months now, and I still can't really put it into words how much it means to me, truly. It was probably my first ever dream role. When I discovered the show, I think I was 14 years old, and I completely fell in love with it. And I was so taken aback by Idina's voice on the cast album, and I just started looking up every bit of footage I could find of her from the movie and from bootlegs of the Broadway show, the off-Broadway show, everything. So many women have played this role. So many extremely talented and just as iconic women have played it and made it what it is today. And one of the really, really remarkable things about the role is that while there are some quintessential sort of, keystones that make Maureen what she is, the role lives so differently on every single person who plays her. And one of the things I'm most thankful for from our creative team that we work with in New York, they're the same team who set the show in 1990s on Broadway with the original cast. And they don't try to make a replica of any previous person. They are very eager to see what you bring to the role. So it's a little bit of a mixed bag of, an homage to Idina's performance, but also making sure I'm living truthfully as myself and bringing Kelsey to the role. And that's sort of the thing that makes every actor's portrayal their own, is just their own individuality. But it's a total dream, and she's so much fun to play. And I'm really, really loving it.
For sure. And we theater fans, we all know the story about how the creator, Jonathan Larson, he passed away. What was it, like the night before the off-Broadway premiere?
It was the day that it was supposed to, it was the day of the first preview on the off-Broadway run. So it was the pre-Broadway run. For those who don't know, before a show transfers to Broadway, it typically has a tryout somewhere. It might be in a different town. It might be in D.C., it might be in Philadelphia, it might be in Boston, Chicago, and they like to see how the show sort of does, and sometimes they do it just off-Broadway, so that's what this show did with an off-Broadway run in a smaller theater, and on the day of the first preview, he tragically passed away from an undiagnosed Marfan syndrome, and he was only 35 years old, so it was completely tragic, and it just makes the story so much deeper and more emotional than it already is, because it has this historical weight to it that we try to honor each and every night.
Yeah, and that's where I was kind of going with it is, you know, he tragically passed away from that undiagnosed condition. Not to mention, you know, he's writing about, you know, a bunch of his friends that were dying because of the AIDS crisis. And so talk about how that sort of, I mean, that is this authentic thing hanging over this musical where, you know, even in the lyrics, it's sort of celebrating how you live instead of how long. You know, there's that whole song about, you know, I can't remember how many, 600 minutes, I always find that, but you know what I mean? Like, talk about that theme of how, you know, it's looking around you and celebrating, you know, the time that you do have.
Yeah. You know, the human experience is so different for each and every person, and no two individuals are alike. That's what makes us individuals. And so the show is a celebration of life and individuality and acceptance. And within that, it is living and loving and accepting for the time that you are here and the time that you do have, because fact of the matter is we don't know how much time we have. That's, you know, the great mystery of life. We don't know how long we're here. We don't know how long the people in our lives are going to be with us. And even if someone is sick, or even if someone is born with a disability or an ailment or something that might predictably cut their time short, truth be told, anything can happen to anyone at any time. So, you know, while that can be a scary thing, that can be a sort of looming thing, you can also take that and spin it and make it a positive thing and lead with love, lead it through your life differently so that you can make the greatest impact no matter how short your time is cut or, you know, a loved one's time is cut. And in the show, you know, we have a character who is, several of the characters are battling AIDS, but we do lose one of them to the disease. And, you know, there's a major point of grief in the show, definitely, for all of the characters grieving that character. But, you know, once we get to the end of the show, it's really just a celebration of who they were and the fact that we knew them at all and the fact that we got to love them at all. So, yeah, that tied with Jonathan's story and the fact that we lost him, we being the world and the musical theater community lost him the way that we did. Just, you know, when it comes to the acting standpoint, you kind of, it does the work for you almost. It's just so emotionally loaded, and it's so easy to tap into the world and tell the story because of everything that the story has given us.
Absolutely. And I feel like it's almost easy to take for granted now how ahead of its time it was for, you know, LGBT issues in particular.
Yeah.
I mean, that, you know, public perception on that social issue has changed, like, you know, lightning fast, you know, compared to a lot of other political issues just in such short amount of time. And so talk about, I mean, here we are, I mean, it was sort of like the early 90s that Jonathan Larson was on Broadway hammering this thing out. I mean, I guess in Hollywood you had Jonathan Demme, doing Philadelphia in 1993, but like in the early 90s, I mean, it was courageous to step out, but for him, he was just writing about the people he knew, you know what I mean?
This wasn't some big
thing. He was just writing about the people he knew. But talk about how Rent in particular, you think, was an early marker there. I mean, this is like, what, like 12, a decade before Brokeback Mountain even. So talk about how it sort of put down that marker, you know, historically, and will always be that. It will always be that early bat and that clarion call that sort of set the table for the public's rapid acceptance on that issue.
Yeah, absolutely. It was so groundbreaking when it debuted because it really was the first of its kind in so many ways. From the music, from the rock opera sort of standpoint, but also just with what it talked about. And there were so many people who came to see the show who never maybe felt that they had a community or a safe place to talk about their issues. But here, right in front of them, was this big blockbuster commercial musical sitting on a Broadway stage talking about these, you know, extremely taboo things and these unsafe things and these, oh, you know, we don't talk about those topics. And it was right on a Broadway stage in front of thousands of people. It was, you know, on the news. It was in newspapers. It was everywhere. You couldn't escape it. And the people, you know, some people were mad. You know, we hear stories all the time about, you know, there were boys kissing on stage and there were girls kissing on stage, and people walked out in the middle of scenes. People left at intermission. And I mean, I will admit, being a national tour, we tour to some, you know, small places in the United States, small in comparison to bigger cities. You know, we get to see Philadelphia, we get to see Boston, we get to see DC and Minneapolis and big cities like that. But you know, for smaller towns where maybe there isn't as big of a conversation about LGBT life and rights and existence, and certainly AIDS itself, it still scares them. So while it's amazing the progress that we've made from 1996 until now, we still have a lot of work to do. So I think that that's one of the things that makes the show still so important. And you said it. I mean, the show was so ahead of its time. Jonathan's writing was so prescient in a way. He was so smart and so ahead of his time. And there are so many references in the show that were quintessential 1990s in reference to pop culture, icons, news reporters, celebrities, fashion, all of these things. But they're still so relevant today. And that's what really makes it so remarkable, too. But, yeah, I mean, people, like I was saying, they came to see the show in the 90s when it debuted, and they just saw themselves. They saw their own representation on stage. It wasn't the same old song and dance, musical theater, kick line moment. You know, there was people of all races, all sexual orientations, interacting with one another and loving one another, not just fighting, not just bickering, not just, you know, existing and saying hello while walking down the street, truly loving one another.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the songs themselves, because God, there's so many, some of them, my favorite Broadway numbers of all time. And let's have fun with it, because there's so many of them. How about we do it sort of rapid fire? I'll throw one out and you can give me just a quick initial thought of, you know, what you think about with that song, and you can kind of keep it short, kind of rattle through, you know, a bunch of them. So what's the first thing you think of when you think of that hard charging opening number, the title number, Rent?
I think of protest. I think of activism, and I think of human rights. And I think of sort of what the fervor that sort of makes us angry to charge through the rest of the show.
Absolutely. All right. Seasons of Love.
Oh my gosh. The Seasons of Love is a gift. Honestly, it's just a gift, because the show is about to get a little difficult, and this is the big reminder of what the core of the show is really about.
All right. One song, Glory.
That is legacy. That is, you know, we all want to leave a mark behind of some kind. And that one song, Glory, just one thing, if I can do one thing and leave it behind that I can be loved and remembered by, then I will have done something worthwhile.
All right. Light My Candle.
Oh, Light My Candle is so fun. It's so flirty. It's so, you know, it's a little tongue-in-cheek. It's that, you know, boy-meets-girl moment and, like, nerves and excitement. It's so sweet.
All right. Ooh, tonight.
Oh, my gosh. That is just like a firework. That is just an explosion of excitement and fierceness and going for exactly what you want.
All right. The zany one that you get to do, Over the Moon.
oh my gosh, it is so many things. And of course, the hardest one that I can think of, like the hardest one to put into words, is the one that I do. it's protest. It is, it's standing up for what you believe in. It's bravery. It's confidence. It's ballsy.
All right. La Vie Boheme, where they say the opposite of war isn't peace, it's creation.
La Vie Boheme is a celebration of life, and if war equals destruction, then we have to counteract that by creating and building back up. It's life.
Awesome. Take Me or Leave Me.
Take Me or Leave Me is it's wanting to be loved and accepted for exactly who you are. it's let's not fight, let's not do this, this isn't important. The important thing is that we love each other and we want to make this work. And it's just, it's a couple's bickering moment. It's a, God, you drive me so crazy, but I love you so much, but why do you do this thing? And I think just about every person who's ever been in a serious relationship can relate to that moment.
All right, two more. The heartbreaker one, I'll cover you.
Oh my gosh, it is, it's a celebration of life and it's a message to a loved one. It is everything that he just needs to say to his beloved.
And then finally, I think one of the most underrated ones is this one, just chokes me up every time. Will I?
You're so right. It's so underrated. It's all of these questions. It's this cacophony of questions of, will I lose my dignity? Will someone care? Will I wake tomorrow from this nightmare? It's the fear of the unknown. It's wanting to be supported and helped through the darkness in hopes that there is a lighter tomorrow.
God, all right. I'm just rattled off. How is it possible that all of those are all in the same musical? That is insane.
I know.
That is insane.
That's a really good point.
That's
so many
incredible.
Good ones.
All right, well, that's the songbook. Before we go, let's talk about sort of, visually what we see on stage. Everyone thinks of, they're talking about their rent and they can't pay their rent, New York and fire escapes and all that kind of stuff and, protests that you do in that scene. Describe, and we're radio, so, paint us a visual picture of, when you're sitting there in the audience, sort of what you see, that whole backdrop on stage.
Yeah, it's sort of this brutalist, minimalist, if you will, set. It's sort of, I call it sometimes our junkyard. There's a big junk sculpture that also doubles as a Christmas tree that kind of lights up. It's just sort of, it's this New York City mess, if you will. But there's lots of propaganda painted on the back walls with, there's some like flames and there's some policemen and there's, people walking down the street. But it's very, it's almost like steampunk art, loft, New York City, jungle lands. If those are all things that I can use in the same sentence. And the set pretty much stays the same. It stays stationary throughout the whole piece, and smaller set pieces are what move around to give us different locations and paint different pictures. But the set is used in very, very many ways. Many different ways, and there are some different levels. There are some lofts and things that we see different characters appear in, and lots of tables getting used to represent different things and different locations. So we try to, with the help of lighting and the different set moves, we try to make it as clear as possible with where we are and how we're moving. But it definitely engages the user, the viewer's imagination. Because one of the fun facts about the show is that the set was rather unfinished, just given the situation with how, Jonathan passed and he was still working on the score. So many aspects of the show were not done yet, but they kept them because it was their little show. It was their little off-Broadway show. And so the costumes and the set and everything have remained exactly the same since 1996. So if viewers want to take a peek at what the set might look like before they come into the theater, you could Google any, Rent Broadway set, and you're going to get a little sneak peek of what we use in the national tour that you will get to see at the National Theater next month.
Awesome. Just sort of in closing here to wrap it up, this is the 20th anniversary tour, although I know it started on Broadway in 1996, so I guess the anniversary, is it one of the things where the anniversary tour has just been going on and on and we're still marking that
yes,
because
that's exactly
20 years
what
would
is.
Technically be 2016, but, or
yes.
2017, depending how you add it up, so I guess, are we like on the tail end of this thing, and how exciting is it now to bring it to the nation's capital, literally such a politically, socially minded town too.
Yeah. So you're absolutely correct. The 20th anniversary was in 2016, and that is when this exact tour launched. So they sent the 20th anniversary tour out in the fall of 2016, and it has just been so successful around the country that the producers have kept it out because it keeps selling. And I was actually told last night by our press rep that sometimes these cities settle years in advance. So the show's been doing well, and we are now in the fourth year of the 20th anniversary tour. The show is currently contracted through May of 2020, and we'll see where it goes from there. There's always a possibility that it could get extended, but as we're nearing the 25th anniversary, maybe something will happen to celebrate that. We're not really sure. So for now, we're doing the show through May, and we're so excited to come to D.C. for many reasons, one being the fact that D.C. is just a wonderful, beautiful town. I actually went to school not too far from D.C. in Winchester, Virginia. I attended Shenandoah Conservatory there and got my BFA in musical theater. So I love the town so much. We got to visit a lot when I was there in college. But, yeah, I mean, it's of course, I mean, what more politically minded town is there? I don't think anything beats D.C. So we're definitely excited to sort of feel that that fire and that fervor. Me especially, playing Maureen with her, you know, she has a lot to say. So I'm excited to share the show with your awesome talent.
Awesome, and we're really excited to see it. Again, everybody, it is the 20th anniversary tour of Rent at the National Theater coming November 12th through the 17th. It's less than a week, everybody, so make sure you get your tickets now and get there because it is – I saw it a couple years ago. It was the 20th anniversary tour then, too.
It's
still rolling around, going around the country, but – it is a must-see. I can't recommend it enough. It is the, you know, to me, it's the Broadway show of all the Broadway shows. It's so vibrant and urgent, and, man, I just get goosebumps every time I see it. So, anyway, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Of course. Thank you so much again for having me.